Okay. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak here, and definitely for all these extra steps that went into making sure this conference was able to happen. This work here is actually joint work of mine with some colleagues at the Chicago Fed, Daniel Aronson and Ross Cole, and a former intern at the Chicago Fed who's actually at Oxford now. She's a Marshall Scholar. She actually deserves a lot of credit for prodding me over the years to do something with this and get this project going. Because I do work for the Fed, I have to give the normal disclaimer that anything I say here today represents only my own views and not those of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago or the Federal Reserve System. This project actually is a bit of a labor of love for me. I have been working on it for a long time now, close to 15 years, back when I was in graduate school. And for me, it really started with a very simple question. I was wondering, is there a connection between minor league pay and PED use? Why would I be thinking that there might be? Well, there's actually a very large literature in economics on cheating you can kind of appeal to here for answers. And the key takeaway of that very large literature is the larger the reward from some kind of action like cheating, the more likely cheating is actually occur. Not surprising, makes a whole lot of intuitive sense. And it's why there is a drug testing policy in place, because what that implies is that you want to make cheating costly. You want to reduce that net reward and make it less likely for people to take those sort of actions. And PED use is, in fact, costly. We know if you test positive for PED use, you're going to be suspended and you're going to lose pay during the amount of games that you're currently suspended. So even with these costs, though, the question in the back of my mind was, you know, is it still worth the risk? You know, we know the policy has changed quite a bit over time. It's become more stringent. Okay. So how much of that did you miss?
Probably the previous 20 seconds.
Previous 20 seconds. Okay. So the question I kept coming back to, you know, who might it be worth the risk for? Are there players out there where even with the suspensions and the fine system that is in place, PED use might still be something that is on the top of their mind? And so the question I kind of have in mind from the player's perspective is, you know, can PED use get me over the hump? And what does the hump mean? Well, that could mean a lot of different things. You know, it could mean off the bench and onto the field. It could mean moved up in the line. Okay, everything good?
Yes, that sounds wonderful.
Okay. Sorry. I had a feeling this computer wasn't going to cooperate. But just to recap here, so there does seem to be some sense in which the pay structure for minor league baseball might actually be connected to PED suspension. Just suggested, but this is something that I've been looking at a long time and really formed the basis of this project. The other side of the equation is, well, even if the pay structure is related to minor league PED use, should teams really even care? It's a lever that they can pull, but is it something that it's really worthwhile for them to do? The way I kind of started thinking about that is to look at these players that have been suspended. Let's look at their draft round. Let's see where they were drafted. With the notion that, you know, teams that invest a lot of money in these higher early round draft picks, and, you know, they probably don't want them to test positive for PEDs. That's going to represent a pretty big hit to their talent pipeline over the years. So what I'm showing you here is the same number of PED suspensions over the 2005 to 2019 season, where I've linked it with Baseball Reference again to find the player's draft round on the year that they actually signed a contract, and apportioned them across the first 50 rounds of the draft. And again, to normalize, given the differences in the number of players in each draft round, I'm adjusting for that. So the way you can think about this is that first bar on the left side there, this is going to be the number of first round draft picks, you know, a typical first round draft size that has been accounted for over the 20 years of PED suspensions by PED users. The interesting thing that pops out with this graph is, again, it does seem to be mostly early round players, or at least there's a significant number of early round players that are being suspended for PED use. So I suggest that this is not something that a team should take lightly, something that they should definitely have in the back of their mind. And if the minor league pay structure can be used as a lever to maybe reduce PED use in the minor league, might be something worthwhile for them. So that was our starting point. But to be able to actually do anything with this, we needed to build a model to capture really three things. transitions between the various levels of the minor leagues up to the major leagues, and the team decisions that go into that, as well as player performance and the decision on the player's part to whether or not they're going to use PEDs. This three-equation model that we've built is really just an effort to ultimately calculate what we call distances to promotion or demotion thresholds that tend to define the pay changes that minor league players would experience as they matriculate to the major leagues. And we do this so that we can kind of identify what we refer to as an at-risk zone for PED use. So we want to find those players that potentially have a lot to either gain or to lose from PED use as they move up and down the wage scale. I won't show any equations today. I'll stay away from that. But really what this model is, it's an ordered probit model where performance and TED suspensions are included as part of that transition process, and they're considered interrelated. So they're endogenous. They can't be determined separately from the transition process that the team actually ultimately makes the decision for. So we have three equations. One equation, which is this deciding or describing your next season level assignment. So as you go from being out of baseball to the independent league, to the rookie, single A, double A, triple A, all the way to the major league, modeling that process. Another equation that models current season performance. Here we're going to have to choose some performance metrics. At this point, we're using WHIP for pitchers and weighted on base average for hitters. That certainly could be extended and planned to be extended in later drafts. We're also normalizing those performance measures relative to the level average that you're at. So we want to take into account that those can mean very different things across the levels that you're playing at. And then finally, your current season PED suspension status. And this is just a binary variable, whether you tested positive and were suspended during that season or not. Now, the key component to all of this model, which those three equations I've kind of grossly oversimplified here just for the sake of time, is really that pay is included in each one. And we want to model the marginal impact that pay has on performance, on PED use, and ultimately where you end up, what level you end up in the next season. Now, that's a difficult thing to do in the minor leagues because unlike major league players, you know, salary information isn't really publicly available. But we can infer a player's pay based on a number of things, and primarily based on what level they're at the moment or what league they've been assigned to. Short season league, like rookie and the lower A levels have their own pay schedule. There's more nuance within the single A level between the advanced A levels and the normal A levels, and then double A and triple A. We also can take into account their experience, how long they've been in the minor league, how long they've been at a given level, and whether they're on a 40-man roster. And those kind of three aspects really form how we come up with an inference about what their pay is likely to be. And ultimately, at the end of the day, what we're interested in is the coefficient and the current season PED suspension status equation on pay. We want to know if I change pay, if I increase it or I decrease it, what does that do to the likelihood of a player testing positive for PEDs and being suspended, taking into account kind of where they stand on the ladder moving up to the major league and taking into account their performance. This model is quite a large model, so I didn't put all the equations up. Obviously, there are a lot of other things you need to control for when you try to make this kind of analysis workable. So I've listed here a whole host of other variables that we include here in these equations. Some are included in all of them. Some are included in only some of them. To identify the model, it actually requires some exclusion restrictions. There need to be some things. And for instance, in the performance and the PED suspension equation that aren't in the level assignment equation, we've been able to come up with those sort of instrumental variables, tested them, and they passed normal statistical tests. The other thing that's very important to note is that this model is also going to assume that these things, because they are all endogenous, even the things that we can observe, the errors in the model, they're going to be jointly correlated, and we need to model that correlation. We're going to need to take into account that there might be some sample selection, some self-selection going on here, that players aren't making this decision to use PEDs in isolation from what they think the team is going to be doing in terms of where they're placing them in the next season. And the teams aren't making that placement decision in isolation from what they think the player might be doing in terms of using PEDs. And so we're going to have to model that. We're going to model that basically is these three error terms are going to be jointly normally correlated, and we're going to estimate those correlations. A sample here we're going to use includes the 2005 through the 2018 season. The only reason 2019 is excluded is because we're going to need to have those values because we're modeling the next season level in placement, so they're going to be used for the 2018 season. We're only going to look at Major League Baseball-affiliated minor league teams, so we're going to throw out teams that aren't affiliates. We're going to exclude the winter, the fall, and the summer league. For various reasons, which I can go into later, but for the sake of time, I'll skip. We're only going to record a player's highest level that he attains in each season. That's going to make things a lot easier. What it's going to complicate, though, is when we measure performance, we're going to have to appearance weight performance so that we take into account all the levels that a player might have appeared in a given season. So in total, we're going to have about 78,000 player season observations, a little more than 26,000 players, and 315 PED suspensions once we're able to match all the data with Baseball Reference. And ultimately, really what this model is doing is rather simple. It's trying to model or explain this player transition matrix that I've shown here at the bottom of the chart, looking at where the player's current level is and where he is in the next season. So for instance, this 27.8 suggests that 27.8% of the players that are at the rookie level in the current season, the next season ended up outside of baseball. There was no record for them on Baseball Reference. So what we're trying to do is explain this transition matrix according to performance and PED suspension, and ultimately wages. And one way to summarize this is to just do it visually. I find it much easier to kind of think of these things visually than put up a big table of coefficients. What the model is really doing is it's translating player characteristics into an index. And this index is being used to inform transitions between levels. So one way to think about this is if you take all of the players at the rookie levels at the moment and you lined them up, rank ordered them here according to this index of player characteristics, those that are most likely to be promoted versus those that are least likely to be promoted, or conversely, most likely to be demoted. And you do this at all the various levels, rookie A, single A, double A, triple A. What the model is trying to rationalize and come up with the best guess for is what these thresholds are. What is the threshold value of this index that kind of delineates those players that were actually promoted from those who weren't? And those thresholds kind of defined for us are at-risk regions for PED use. These players that fall near the thresholds or between the thresholds, they potentially would have a lot to gain from PED use if they could boost their career a little bit and get themselves over the hump of getting promoted to that next level. The interesting thing about this model is when we estimate it, there's no unit for this index. It's just a raw index. I've shown it here in standard deviation units. It ultimately gets transformed into probabilities. But when you look at these threshold values across the various levels, they actually align quite well with what we think of as known wages or what we've measured for pay for these minor league players. And the chart here shows you what the median wage is for each player at the level in our data set. You're seeing the wages are rising as the thresholds are rising, so it's becoming more and more difficult to get promoted over time. The differences between promotion and demotion thresholds are also widening generally as you get closer to the major league. The other thing that's kind of noticeable about this, and we thought this was encouraging, the first pass of the model, if you look at the red dots actually denote players that did receive a PED suspension in a given season. Those red dots actually tend to cluster more around these thresholds that we're estimating than the blue dots do. Suggested that there does seem to be some relationship between PED use and this promotion schedule or wage schedule that you see through the minor leagues. And so everything else I do today is just going to make that relationship more clear, hopefully. Of course, various caveats always come into play. You know, this is a model. It's not perfect. It's still very much a work in progress to define these at-risk zones. It's certainly the case from what we're seeing already that the model implies more transitions than actually exist in the data. Model does a good job of capturing promotions and demotions, but it underestimates the number of retentions, players that are actually kept at the same level from season to season. Still statistically significantly getting that right if we look at classification tests, ROC analysis, ROC curves. We're better than a coin flip here at getting those retentions right. But it's not quite as high as you probably would like to see with a model like this. It's also the case that a lot of what's going on in predicting PED suspensions, even though the pay structure does seem to be a component of that, it's coming in a statistically significant predictor, there's still a lot of unexplained variation in this model for PED suspension. So it's going to be very critical that we take that unexplained variation into account and get the correlations right across these equations so that we have confidence that the coefficient that we have on the pay structure is actually consistently estimated. And the other thing I should say in the background here, it's a limitation, but it's one we really can't get around. Pay is inferred, and the way that we've inferred wages here, there may be some variation over time that we've not been able to capture that might be missing as well. And so that's a potential source of bias that we still have to work on. The selection bias that we do see in the model, this correlation across the model's error terms, it does kind of make sense. We are getting some pretty strong correlations that are being estimated, and they're in directions that you would expect. So, for instance, we find a very strong positive correlation between the errors in the PED suspension equation and the performance equation. So, put this into words, if we overpredict a player's likelihood of using PEDs, we're probably over-predicting his performance as well. That's very intuitive, makes sense. Similarly, if we overpredict their likelihood of PED use, we're going to overpredict the level that they ultimately end up in. That also makes sense, works through performance, kind of how you would expect. The other correlation that shows up is a little more troubling is we get a negative correlation between performance and the level model or equation errors. And that's mostly for the players that don't receive PED suspension. So we have a model that does very well at describing the drivers of level changes and performance and PED suspensions for those who were actually suspended. But for those that weren't suspended, a lot of what's going on there with the drivers behind their level transitions, we're not capturing. That's something that we still have to work on. But now that we have this model in hand, we can re-ask the question of who uses PED. And now we can frame it within the context of the model. So we can appeal to these distance measures that we've constructed from the nearest threshold. So we can, for instance, look at a player in AA, and we can see how far is he from his promotion threshold to AAA. And we can do this for those players that were suspended for PED use and for those who weren't. And that's what this plot here shows you. It's looking at the distribution for each of those two subsets of players. The blue bars are the distribution for those players who did not receive a PED suspension in a given season, and the red bars are those for those players that did receive a PED suspension. So I think the thing I want you to take away from this picture is if you look at the blue bars for a moment, I mean, right in the center here is the threshold that we estimate for each player. The distribution of those blue values, they tend to concentrate or peak right near that threshold, a little bit above it. So, on average, these players are kind of right at that promotion threshold, these unsuspended players. Now, there's variation on both sides. There are some to the left, there are some to the right, but on average, they're kind of just right above that promotion threshold. Now, if you look at the same distribution for those players that receive PED suspensions, these are the red bars here, these players, the average is a little bit below the promotion threshold, a little bit left shifted in the graph here. So in that sense, there is some degree to which these players actually maybe are trying to bump themselves up to get over the hump by using PEDs. They know they're just a little short of their peers, and they're trying to gain that competitive edge to catch up. So you can kind of get that out of this picture. It definitely is the case that PED users are more likely to fall just below that promotion threshold given their level. And we can look at the other dimension, which is the demotion threshold, and see what happens there as well, because these potentially be players that have a lot to lose, maybe more than just falling a little bit behind, but be falling very far behind their peers. And what you see here is something very similar. For unsuspended players, the average unsuspended player is comfortably above that demotion threshold. This distribution peaks pretty far to the right in terms of the distances that we estimate. But for those players that were suspended, there's a little less room for comfort. Those red bars, much closer to this demotion threshold. Now, the peak is still above. On average, we're still a little bit above that. It's below their peers, their unsuspended peers, but still above. There is a fairly large mass that are just right at that threshold. So they're also, PED suspended players are also more likely to fall just above that demotion threshold for their level. So you put these two things together, and it kind of gives you what we think is a pretty intuitive result. So who uses PEDs? Well, the first subset of these minor leaguers are those players with the most to gain. These are the players that are going to be right near that promotion threshold, and they think this might be just enough to get them over the hump. One way to see this is to actually take from the model and calculate average marginal effects for a 1% increase in pay. So if I increase your pay by 1%, what does the model tell me the likelihood is that you're likely? So what does the model tell me happens to the likelihood of you receiving a PED suspension? So if it was a one-to-one thing, 1% increase in pay would lead to a minus 1% decrease or minus 1% change in your probability of a PED suspension. So increased pay by 1%, likelihood of you being caught using PEDs goes down by 1%. It's not a one-to-one relationship at all in the model. There is a relationship there. It's statistically significant. It's fairly strong, but it's certainly not one-to-one. Although the x-axis in this graph actually groups the various minor league players by their estimated promotion probability, and it puts them into deciles between 0, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and so on and so forth, all the way up to the highest decile. And what you see here is those players really with more than about a 50% chance of being promoted, that's where you start to see some pretty big impacts of pay on the likelihood of a PED suspension. It's going to be bigger than a half a percent. It's going to be closer to 2/3 of a percent change. So I increase your pay by 1% and I lower your probability of being suspended for PEDs by about 2/3. Now, the other aspect of this is on the other side of the coin. We can do the same thing by demotion probability. We can chunk our players out again here into deciles by demotion probability, and we can see what happens according to the model if we increase pay by 1%, what happens to their probability of being suspended for PED. And what pops out here is there's also those players that have something to lose are also kind of at risk of using PED. A little bit of a U-shaped distribution in this figure here. There's really kind of some clustering here that goes on between a 30 to 50% chance of being demoted. That's where your biggest impacts of a pay increase are going to be. Makes sense with the distributions that I showed you. In general, most of these players, even the suspended players, are above the demotion threshold. But as you get near them, you're starting to see some pay impacts filtering through. So again, who uses PEDs? Those with something to gain and those with something to lose. Now, to wrap up, what I thought I would do is actually do a little bit more current analysis, put this hopefully into a little bit more terms that make it a little more approachable. Something very interesting happened prior to the 2019 season. Toronto Blue Jays kind of unexpectedly implemented an across-the-board pay increase of roughly 50% for all of their minor league players. That was not something that was necessarily on everyone's radar at the time. There's been a lot of controversy and discussion about minor league pay. And they kind of were a forerunner in kind of getting ahead of that and increasing the pay of their players. So what we thought we would do is conduct something that we call the Toronto experiment. Let's assume that all of the Major League Baseball teams follow Toronto's lead and increase their minor league players' pay by 50%. What would the model suggest to us, or what can we simulate from the model would happen to PED use? This figure here actually breaks it out by the various levels. So you can see what we think is going to happen at the rookie, single A, double A, and triple A level. The dashed black line is sort of the average effect, which is actually statistically significant from zero. So we kind of see this kind of experiment, a 50% increase across the board in pay, likely to decrease the probability of a PED suspension by about 18%. So not trivial. And in fact, I'll put this number in dollar and cent terms in a second and show you that it certainly isn't trivial. Interestingly, though, if you look at where that's coming from within the minor leagues, the model certainly thinks that most of this is going to be coming from the lower levels, the rookie and the A levels. There you get much, much bigger effects. And in fact, By AA, the impact is no longer statistically significant, even though it's still negative. And at AAA, the model sees no impact whatsoever. By the time you get to AAA, that carrot of being so close to the major league, it's very difficult to counteract that with an increase in minor league pay. But to go back to where we started, why should Toronto even care? Was this something that was in the back of their mind when they were coming up with this policy? I don't know. But what I can tell you is if you look at their minor league PED suspensions over the full history, they certainly had some elevated values over the last several years, 2016, 2018, even 2019 after the policy. It came down, but it was still a little bit elevated over their full sample average of a little more than one suspension per season. This might have been something that was in their mind, but I think the bigger question is, even if it wasn't, should it be in the back of their mind? To answer this question, I can't really appeal to what we're working on here, but I can appeal to some prior work that I've done, looking at the cost of these suspensions at the team level and at the league level, recent paper in the Journal of Sports Economics. And what I found there with a co-author was, generally, when a team, major league team, has minor league PED suspensions greater than one in a season, on average, that reduces their Forbes franchise value estimate by about $6 million per suspension. But that's real money at this point. I want you to keep that sort of $6 million in mind, and we'll build on that going forward. But you can see Toronto averages more than one suspension per season. So they've had some seasons here where, you know, according to this work that I've done in the past, you know, they've been kind of leaving money on the table. If they could reduce PED suspensions among their minor leaguers, it might actually boost their franchise value. Now, if we look at the league as a whole, this plot here shows you the total number of minor league PED suspensions across all of major league affiliated teams from 2005 to 2019. What you see here is there's been a lot of variation over time, but the average over this time period is about 36 suspensions per season. That's a little bit more than that one per team that you kind of want to see to avoid kind of having it affect the bottom line for a team. Our experiment, if you translate those probability numbers into just pure suspension numbers, would apply about six fewer suspensions. So we get back closer to that efficient one minor league PED suspension per team value. Now, looking at the other results in this paper, this would actually result in a gain of about $3 million and total franchise value for the major league level. It's not six or a little higher than six because the distribution of these things across teams is not at all equal. So even if we reduce the total down to 30, there's still some very unequal behavior across the teams that would be pulling back on that number a bit. But the interesting thing about that $3 million number is if you look at some of the proposals that are out there in the press about what it would cost to compensate minor league baseball players. Let's say, for instance, if they were all paid the federal minimum wage, you know, their numbers being floated around in the $4 million range. You know, that experiment's bigger than what we ran with the Toronto experiment, but it still goes to show, in some respect, these the increasing pay could actually somewhat pay for itself by lowering PED suspensions here. There are real costs to these PED suspensions over time at the league and the team level that the teams don't always take into account. So to wrap up here, I know I'm a little bit over time and I apologize for the technical difficulties. But what happens next with all of this? Well, this is still very much a hot button topic. We certainly have a lot more work to do on our model, make sure that we're fully confident in our estimates, even though what we have so far is very suggestive of a link between pay and PED use. But there's a lot going on outside of what we're working on. There's still a lawsuit percolating through its way through the courts. Seeking minimum wage and overtime pay for minor league players. I think most people are familiar with the early version of this lawsuit that was trying to actually do it under federal law and attain that federal minimum wage protection. That lawsuit was preempted by a congressional act, the Saving America's Pastime Act, which put in that exemption for Major League Baseball. But the current case has actually morphed over time, and it's actually more targeted to state laws now. Particularly Arizona, Florida, and California. So not surprisingly, the two spring training states and California, where wage and labor laws are a little more favorable towards union activity. Now, not only is there movement going on amongst the players and their representatives, but there's also been a lot of movement going on amongst the teams themselves and the league. The Cubs and Giants have both reportedly increased minor league play prior to this season. So you've got Toronto and the Cubs and the Giants, at least three teams that are sort of getting out ahead of this. And Major League Baseball just recently announced league-wide increases that are supposed to go into effect during the 2021 season. Those increases are a little different than the experiment that we ran. On average, they come out to about a 55% increase. So it's in the ballpark of what we were looking at. But they're very skewed in the way they're divvied out across the various leagues and levels. On the short season rookie and lower level A league, the increase is much smaller, just as it's expected to be at Triple A, while they're expected to be a little bigger at the Single A and the Double A level. The other elephant in the room with all of this is at the same time there's been this discussion about increasing minor league pay, there's also been a lot of discussion about potentially contracting minor league teams, eliminating minor league affiliates. And most of that discussion is centered around the lower levels, where we find the big impacts on PED use from increasing wages. So if you take our results into account, the smaller increase in pay at these lower levels combined with the possibility of contraction would actually probably suggest a smaller impact on PED use than what I've shown you here. And in particular, the contraction question is a very interesting one, because if you kind of follow it all the way through, what that is implying is that sort of that the motion threshold is moving around at those levels. It's raising the bar, essentially. There's going to be more of these players that are probably going to be down at the independent leagues. So to some extent, you're taking some of that PED problem and pushing it out of Major League Baseball into the independent league. But at the same time, by raising that bar for demotion, you're also encountering a whole new set of minor league players and potentially changing their incentive, whether or not that they are likely to use PEDs. So you could actually pretty easily construct a scenario that in the short term, even with the increase in pay at those levels, you could see an increase in PED use until kind of everything gets settled out and we reach a new equilibrium. But with that, I'll stop, and I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
Scott, thanks so much for bringing us home. There were no questions in the room, but thank you. That was excellent.
Thank you.